Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Now, I'm not a guy to sit here and say, I told you so. Nobody likes that guy. I am not that guy. Yes, I am. I tried to tell you that Quinn Snyder does not get nearly enough run, nearly enough credit as a head coach. I tried to tell you that Rudy Gobert is a game-altering big. I tried to tell you that Donovan Mitchell is Donovan Mitchell. I tried to tell you that the Utah Jazz are for real, but you wouldn't listen. Or at least the Houston Rockets would not listen. Because after winning game one, Houston rolled out and napped it out for the first 18 minutes of game two. And then Utah did what Utah will do if you sleep on Utah. They dominated. The first quarter and a half last night was a clinic administered by every guy in a Jazz jersey. They got up by 19, and they were making a Houston team with a couple of Hall of Famers look like also-rans. But then Donovan Mitchell went to the bench with foul trouble. Then James Harden arrived at the arena. I mean, he'd been there all along, but it was then that he took over. And then the beard starts to land shots like Sugar Ray Leonard. And when the flurry was over, he had 17 in the quarter, and Houston was within 9 at halftime. Then they roll out, they keep it up in the third quarter, and they rip that lead back from the Jazz. They ripped it back with a run that was punctuated by this filth from James Harden.
There was a lot of speed on that drive. Harden just unloads! Woo! Oh my goodness.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That is beautiful. Look at the ferocity.
And you're dunking over a power four, too. In Derek Favors.
Thanks to TNT for that. I'm not sure what's better, the dunk or his signature mysterious post-dunk celebration. Tie for first. And that was the moment when it was supposed to be over. That was the moment where Houston had the lead. They were at home. They were the best team in the regular season. Utah had put up a pretty nice effort, but it was not meant to be. Body bag them, toe tag them, thank them for coming, because they're not beating Houston four times in five games. That was over right then and there. Excuse me.
Excuse me, my bad.
Because Utah is not built that way. They are not wired to show up and then give up. They should have been dead, but they weren't. You see, these dudes are no joke. And the Rockets should have known that. So, how do you respond to a filthy dunk like the one from the beard? With an even filthier dunk from Donovan Mitchell. And the only thing better than this nastiness from Donovan Mitchell is Kevin Harlan on the mic and the audio of Mitchell on the replays. Alvin, can you roll it?
Crossover, Mitchell into a reset. No! Oh! He came in hot and went up high. And when you get that hot, you've got to come in hot. Oh, my goodness.
Holy crap. Freaking disgusting. Revolting. That's a dunk contest dunk. And Mitchell dropped it in the fourth quarter of a four-point road playoff game. And is it just me, or is my man Kevin Harlan on the call for every nasty dunk and great moment in NBA history? No, check that. For every great moment in sports history, insane dunk on the court, Harlan is there.
With no regard for human life!
Insane drunk on the field. Harlan is there for that, too.
The guy is drunk, but there he goes.
And the only thing better than Harlan's call of Mitchell's dunk was Mitchell's explanation of Mitchell's dunk.
To be honest with you, I was just trying to shoot a floater and grab a rebound, but I just happened to be up there, so I figured why come down with it.
That is a legendary description. Quote, I just happened to be up there, so I figured why not come down with it? Yeah, I mean, sure, why not? I'm up here, so I may as well dunk. I just happened to be floating by, so I figured I may as well throw it down. You know, like he just happened to be in the neighborhood. Like he was on his way home from work and figured, I think I'll just stop off at the store and get some milk. Except instead of coming home from work, he was just levitating in the air. And instead of stopping off for milk, he was throwing down a ridiculous dunk.
Into a reason. No!
But don't be fooled. The Utah Jazz are not just about Donovan Mitchell dunks. The truth is, that even wasn't even one of his best shooting games. In fact, it was pretty rough. and yet he was still a huge presence. And Joe Ingles was doing what Joe Ingles does, draining threes and getting up in dudes' faces. Houston may have thought they had that series after they won game one, but they didn't. And now they've got a fight on their hands. And you do not want to fight with the Jazz. You do not want to fight with the Jazz. Just ask the Thunder. You can track them down on the driving range or at the first tee. And if you don't stomp on their head while they're down, they will get up and they will punch you in the face. And that's what happened last night to the Rockets. Not dead, can't quit. Not dead, can't quit. Better kill these cats while you can, because that zombie just keeps coming. We are joined by a very good friend of the program, Bob Myers. Bob, good morning. It is great to have you back. How are you?
Good, man. Let's just, next time we introduce me, just do the San Quentin part. Leave all the other stuff out.
You got it, Bob.
People, just say that, and that'll be a better intro.
Well, Bob, I don't know if it's going to be better, but you got to admit, at this point in your career, as well as you've done, that's pretty much what you're known for, right? Not the NCAA championship or anything else.
I was at a game, one of our games, and we had one of the inmates come from San Quentin who had been released, and I was talking to him, and I was kind of thinking inside, you know, I've told you before, people that have heard me, I grew up the farthest from San Quentin you could. I mean, I grew up in a suburban, mostly white community, so I never thought I'd get to know people in San Quentin prison, but I was kind of laughing to myself. The guy was like, oh yeah, I met you in San Quentin. Who do you run into? Oh yeah, I know you from San Quentin.
Wow.
So no, man, it's I still got to get you in there. You have to go.
No, I know, Bob. In fact, let me ask you right now, before we talk about your team, I understand that you're on the mend following hip surgery recently. The legendary Raymond Ritter has officially listed you as questionable for that trip. How is the hip doing right now, and what's your status?
Well, Ritter's right. It's questionable. That's probably right around the time that I think I can get back. But that's the goal, Jim. That's what I've got up on my – you know, Rocky had his mirror, and he had the picture of what do you have, Mr. T up there?
Sure.
Whatever he had. I've got a San Quentin, you know, fence up there that I can look at, a barbed wire fence. But September, hopefully I'll be back by then. I love playing there. And even if I don't, I think I should be able to go. But you got to come either way. You got to come with me.
This might be the year, Bob. This might be the year. Yeah. I know you've invited me, and I know that if I don't show up sooner or later, it's going to be on me, and you're going to stop asking. So I know. I appreciate it. Keep me posted. Let's keep each other posted. All right, let me ask you about Steph Curry. He played one game since early March. He comes off the bench, Bob. He scores 28 and 27 minutes in game two. He made it look easy. Now, as a player yourself and somebody who does dominate the courts at San Quentin, how hard is it just to come right back, get into the flow, and light up a game the way he did on such a big stage?
It's impossible. I mean, I'm not saying that because he's on our team. I mean, you could ask people that play in the NBA, or I don't know how you do that. I guess if I had to explain it, I'd say he's that good at what he does in life. And sometimes God blesses us, or we show up in life with a certain talent. And then the best people cultivate that and work on that talent and hone it to a point where you can do something like he did. And I was sitting before the game, one of the guys I work with, and I said, you think he makes his first three? I knew, I just figured his first shot would be a three because that's just what he does. And the guy looks at me, he goes, nah, man, he hasn't played 50 days. And I said, yeah. And I thought to myself, why would I think he would make his first? I mean, he's not going to make his first shot. I think he made his first three. And they weren't, you know, regular. His threes are different than the regular three. It's like 3 feet behind the line with a guy in your face. But, yeah, man, you know, a guy like that, those guys come along, and you've watched great athletes, Jim. You've covered kind of and spoke to and gotten to know the best. I think what the thing about Steph, that kind of being around him every day, that I try to acknowledge is these people are unique. They don't come along. They're somewhat generational. And so you just appreciate him. You appreciate him. You shake your head. You're glad he's glad he's with us. But it's good for the NBA, too. Just one of those guys. And you see him in different sports, but just you just appreciate.
Can't believe it's Thursday already. I mean, this week is flying right by. So ask yourself this. Have you done anything this week worth talking about, worth remembering, worth sharing on your social feed? No? Well, change that up right now. Do not let the playoffs get away without getting to a game. head on over to fanexchange.com. The tickets, which are purchased on FanExchange, are always guaranteed. You don't have to worry about getting to the gate and being surprised, a bad surprise. You don't have to worry about going there and not getting in. Whether it's NBA, MLB, wrestling, Coachella, a Broadway musical even, FanExchange gets you closer to the action. You can find the very best seats at the best prices at FanExchange.com. Use the promo code ROME. Promo code ROME and get 50% off the service fees on your very next purchase. Get out there. You'll be happy you did. FanExchange. We have tickets. Bob Myers joins us. I agree, Bob. When he took that first three, I mean, never mind making that first three, but the way he took that first three and knocked it down, that to me was just a holy bleep moment. Like, damn, Steph, really? But that's what he does. You know, from where I'm sitting, and I'm sitting on the outside, but from where I'm sitting, it seems like this season may have been different from the ones that came before it because you've dealt with more injuries, you've dealt with more fatigue than in the past. Steve Kerr, Bob, who was a part of the Bulls three-peat, said that this year would be the toughest one. Has it been that? Has it been what he expected, or maybe even more challenging?
You're right. It has been the hardest because he played. I mean, we have got the probably most competent, capable guy in our coach because he lived it. He lived it with the Bulls. He saw the circus ride. He saw it for 3 years. He saw winning two, and they won two. They won three in a row. But he had, you know, Michael Jordan, who's just one of these guys that just refused to lose. Guys with that temperament he had, but. Steve said, this is going to be the choppiest. And you kind of sit there when you hear that before the season, and part of you thinks, well, why would you say that? We just went 16-1 in the playoffs. We got most of the same team back. But then you think of the human nature of this whole thing. And I asked Draymond, who I'm sure you've had on the other day.
Yep.
This was before our game on Tuesday. And I said, hey, man, I said, so when I'm watching you guys play, and you probably saw us limping into the postseason. We were playing awful, Jim, the last month of the season. And I said, how am I supposed to know if you guys are trying or not? Mm. And I said, Draymond, I don't play. I don't know if you played 50% or Andre was playing 75 or Kevin, because I'm not out there and I can't gauge your effort. And he said to me, he looked at me, he goes, you know who I am. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, I got to have something on the line. And I said, okay. And he said, if the game doesn't mean anything, and we played probably our last 3 weeks of basketball as the two seed, and beyond the game meaning what it meant from a pride standpoint, Jim, for our team, it didn't mean anything. We weren't going to drop to a three seed. We weren't going to be a one seed. So our players are out there playing. And Draymond's the type of guy, you know, when you go to Vegas with guys, and there's certain guys, they got to play. Draymond's got to play at the $5,000 table. He can't play at the $25 table. He cannot do it. I mean, he's not one of those guys. He's bad in exhibition games. He's not a good all-star game guy. But in the playoffs, and I just read an article, what he does in the playoffs is much better than what he does in the regular season. And we've got guys like Iguodala that are capable of that. Obviously, Durant is well-known to do that. So, yeah, I mean, I was sitting there thinking, who's going to show up in the playoffs? Fortunately, they've been great. And it wasn't that I thought they wouldn't show up then, but, you know, the way we were playing, you never know, right? I mean, we're taught, you're successful because of the habits you bring every day. And that's what we're taught. But at a certain level with these guys, they, especially ones that have done it, they're able to gauge, okay, I'm waiting for my moment, I'm waiting, and now it's here. And they know they can flip that switch. But as a GM, it's kind of scary sometimes because you don't really know.
God, that's fascinating, Bob. That is so good. Because I was going to say, I don't want to be disrespectful of the regular season, and I know you wouldn't either, but in the fourth year of the run, I mean, it's got to be really hard to find meaning in a regular season game for these guys, right? How do they do it?
Yeah, well, I went up to Iguodala specifically after the last game, Jim, and I basically said, I've never seen someone disrespect the regular season like you do. And he kind of started laughing.
Wow.
And he looked at me. And these guys, here's the response, though, Jim. Let's say somebody said something to you, and you were in this business as a player or something, and you've done it before. And somebody challenged you, and you looked at him and said, who are you to question? You're like, do you not know who I am? It's almost like you know, a swimmer or a sprinter that's running the qualifying heats, and they're just running the qualifying. They know they got to be in the top three, and they finish third, and they go, good, I'm in the main race. And you go, well, you didn't win in your heats. And the guy goes, why would I care about winning the heats? I don't get a medal for winning the heat. When the real race comes on, I'll win that race. So these guys kind of look at you and push back a little bit, But you're right. There's a human nature to it that only the athlete can understand. And for me to question our guys, they're right. Because Steve got frustrated at the end of the year, and he challenged our team after we lost to Indiana. And he said something like, you know, we didn't play hard and this and that. And I said, Steve, we always have to remember, and he agreed, we cannot question the character of these guys because they've done it. And until they haven't done it, we got to kind of let them do it the way they want to do it. But that's the challenge, Jim. That's the nuance that the business we're in. It's almost like, how do you gauge that? How do you navigate that? And I think we're trying to figure that out the best we can.
Bob Myers, my guest. It's fascinating, Bob. I mean, to that point, I know why you would have concerns. I know why Steve Kerr would have concerns. But the players, fact of the matter is, you guys have won 22 of your last 24 playoff games. Until they give you evidence of otherwise, I could see where the players would feel that way. Let me ask you this. One of the things that you said is that when you won that first title, you received hundreds of text messages. And then when you lost in Game 7, you received, well, roughly two. And, Bob, I've had one successful coach or executive on after another say that at a certain point, losing is misery and winning is no longer a joy. It's just a relief from that misery. You've always been kind of a different guy, so let me ask you the question. Is it how it feels to you, or can you still find joy in every single win?
I'm trying, man. You know, you have to, Jim, because otherwise what are we doing? And I can empathize, or I can relate to the people that say that, because that's inside every GM is that feeling. But you have to almost fight against it. And so when we lost in Game 7 to Cleveland at home, you're right. I mean, you don't get – if you're doing it for text messages or pats on the back and trophies and shiny things, that's fine. But it has to be about more than that. And I remember one of my most favorite days in this business was the day after we lost Game 7. Was probably the next 14 hours later. We lost to the Cavs. We saw them celebrate on our home floor. We were up 3-1. Everybody knows what happened. We had the best record in the history of the league in the regular season. So we're here now, and we've lost. And I'm sitting there, and I got when you lose or you win, at the end of every team season, at least in the NBA, you have exit interviews where the general manager or the coach, you do it sometimes together, sometimes separate, meet with your players. And you kind of do a debriefing on the season, and you look at the guy and you just say, so that close.
I'm losing you, Bob.
Game seven. Jim, you hear me?
Yeah, I got you now. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. That close to that close to winning. When you play in a game seven of the NBA Finals, I was driving to the game thinking, it's like the Dodgers and Astros. There's too much to. That outcome of that game is really everything for people. I mean, the difference between winning a championship and winning a game seven and losing is everything. So we lose. So the next day I'm sitting there at the exit interviews across from our players, and I've never been prouder. And you look at a guy, and you remember Draymond got suspended for game five. So I was sitting there waiting for someone on our team to say, like Steph or Clay or somebody said, well, Draymond hadn't got suspended. Or, you know, if Steph would have made a couple more shots or if Clay could have made some shots, what I saw was all our players, Jim, they looked at me individually, and I asked Steph, what do you think happened? He says, I got to be better. I wasn't good enough. And then Draymond looked at me in his moment of his interview and said, I'll tell you one thing, I'm never going to feel this feeling again. This will never happen again. So pride of going to work with people like that, that's when you learn more about people as an adversity than when success comes. When success comes, you're great. Everybody loves you. Everybody gets along. But in adversity, in the times in your life where things have been difficult or something happens to you or your family, it's not good. Or you get fired or you get in trouble. That's when, you know, you might get four text messages, but those are the four most important people. Because when you win your awards and you get celebrated, all the acquaintances, all the people are wanting to touch you and say, hey, you know, great job. But when you're not doing well, that's when you find out more. And when we lost, I found out more about our team than when we won. And I really liked what I saw. And so you can find a lot. It's not just misery. It's the best time to evaluate who you're going to work with.
Bob Myers, Golden State Warriors president of basketball ops, general manager, most of all a San Quentin Hoops legend. Bob, it is so good to have you back. I appreciate that conversation. Every time we have it, but especially this time of year, you are the best. Glad you're on the mend. I know you're going to fire out and play hurt, get it done, and it's great to have you back, Bob. I appreciate it very much.
Jim, any game you want, let me know. if we keep playing here. Come to a game.
Richmond. Jeff in Richmond. I hope, for your sake, Hawk, and you didn't get played. Let's go there right now. I break format, opening segment, telephone call. Jeff, what's going on, brother?
Jim, thanks for the vine, and thanks for the time. And Jim, let me first of all say, Jim, to the millions, Jim, and the millions of my peeps across the fruited plain, Jim, that finally, Jim, the dirtiest player in the game, Jeff from Richmond, has come back to the Jim Rome Show. And let me say for the record, Jim, that anytime you and that slackered XR4TI crew see Jeff from Richmond on the marquee, there's one thing I can guarantee you, Jim, and that is this, Jim, that business is about to pick up. Clones, what do you think about the dramatic return of Jeff from Richmond? It doesn't matter what you think, clones. Jim, I know you and the morally bankrupt clones have a lot of questions to ask the chosen one, Jeff from Richmond. And let me answer emphatically, Jim, by saying yes, Jim. Yes, Jeff from Richmond still wears grossly clopped lettuce. Yes, Jim. Jeff from Richmond, after all these years, still has a combination of the boyish good looks of Tom Cruise and Broadway Joe Willie Namath in his prime. Yes, Jim, Jeff from Richmond still loves to bump around in a fine luxury sled here in the great Commonwealth of Virginia. And yes, Jim, Jeff from Richmond still loves to roll out of the rack each and every morning, enjoying the fit and feel of a $3,500 custom-made Armani suit. And finally, Jim, Jeff from Richmond, after all these years, still dwells in an exclusive 10-acre countryside estate, Jim, the biggest house on the biggest hill in the biggest part of town. And I wanted to mention that, Jim, because when I was waiting on hold dealing with the Hawkman, I came to the realization, Jim, that I simply have not been giving myself enough credit lately. Close, the bottom line is this: whether you like it or you don't like it, learn to love it, because Jeff from Richmond is back in the great Commonwealth of Virginia for cutting-edge sports analysis and some smack. You need look no further, Jim, than the Commonwealth. We are your hookup. Holler if you hear me. Moving along, Jim, I'm sure the CBS suits like Tyler Hale swarm around you after each and every show in their horn-rimmed glasses and their polyester microfiber JCPenney attire, saying things like, "Well, Jim, those were some extremely strong takes, and those clones were quite entertaining." Memo to all you CBS suits, you should never, and I mean ever, doubt the creative ability and skill set of Mr. Jim Rome. Flip the show on at noon Eastern, flip the show off at 3 p.m., and let Rome do his thing. Finally, Jim, very quickly, how jacked up do you think Jeff from Richmond was, Jim, on November the 9th, 2016, Jim, when the greatest smack runner in the history of the jungle, Donald from Manhattan, stepped on the biggest political stage and captured the most coveted prize in all of politics? Jim, the bottom line is this: Kanye West and I believe in our hearts that Donald from Manhattan will make America safe again. Donald from Manhattan will make America strong again. And most importantly, Jim, Donald from Manhattan will make America great again. Jim, thank you for your time. Aloha means goodbye. War Commonwealth of Virginia. War Jake and Rogan. Rome helping revive the Rat family. War Mr. Automatic J. Stu without the nicks and cuts of a blade. And until next time, Jim.
Good night now! Jeff in Richmond, he's back. This says, nice to see Jeff has finally regained consciousness, but he better stay in his lane. If he gets too big for his britches, we might have to have Orin return and knock him down to the ground again. Skillet in Raleigh. This tweeter is also on that topic. At TFP will eat. Does Orin in Denver still get credit for Jeff in Richmond's murder? So no sooner than the shine is off the call, people are pointing to, yeah, hey, Rome, great to have him back. But remember what Orin in Denver did to him back in the day.
Jethro in Richmond. I get to focus my attention on you, bruh. I don't know what mixture of hay and raccoon droppings you've been toking on in that corncob pipe of yours, but it must be the chronic because you plumb flipped your lid, homie. You mean to tell me you hopped in that horse and buggy you call a sled, took 3 days rations, and motored all the way into town from that shanty you call a crib in the middle of that swamp you call a suburb to get your jungle life crushed? Listen closely, Huck Finn. I might have got myself run before I got a chance to finish, but you will not be so lucky there, Forrest. Because I'm going to make sure I get through this call. Similar to the way your lady, your second cousin, isn't leaving the local juke joint until the last swig of moonshine is gone out of that XXX mug she calls a shot glass. I promise you, Jebediah, by the time I'm done with you, you're going to wish you stayed on the porch, sipping mint juleps, strumming and a-picking on that comb, outfitted with rubber bands that you call a banjo, trying to listen to Romy over the sound of all 18 of your youngins fighting over who Pappy's going to whittle a pair of shoes for next. I hope that you and your wife Clementine enjoyed that five-course smorgasbord of roadkill possum with all the fixings under that kerosene lantern hanging from the ceiling by that wire hanger you call a chandelier last night, because right now you are getting your manhood took. Old Clem might not be able to look at you the same way after this. And we all know what that means for you, Jeff. It's back to sleeping in the chicken coop, listening to the Soggy Bottom Boys on that phonograph and playing Spin the Bottle with the Sheep. Stay in your lane, you hillbilly. You might be the king of the trailer park in the town of Deliverance, but to me, you're just a hick hopped up on cheap meth and corn pone who made the tragic mistake of bringing a raccoon
Calvin,
cup.
Calvin, like I think I've had enough. I've heard enough. I got to jump in there. But you know what I haven't? Go ahead and finish it.
That genuine Army-issue jacket that you so promptly cut the sleeves off of 5 minutes after purchasing it for $2 from the local pick and save. Ain't nothing for you this side of the Mason-Dixon line except hard times, hurt feelings, and a dose of smack that'll make you wish that Ma didn't choose her brother to be the pater de familias of her only retarded son named Jeff in Richmond. And I hope you holler back, hillbilly, because I need the reps for the smack off. Just make sure that you turn the crank enough times on that there telephone of yourn, because the last call you made sound like it was breaking up a bit. Somebody please call the jungle police. Tell them to bring white chalk and yellow tape, because I am verbally murdering this inbred. That's right, Jeff. Jeff, you're a hillbilly and an inbred, and I got nothing to hide. So come on over, officers. Yeah, come on over.
Let me ask you something. Have you ever heard a call like that before? Even the XR4TI, who were not around for that and have never heard that before, are blown away. Hawk's porn stash just slid right off his face. Their GM, Les Snead, is my guest. Les, great to have you back on the show. How are you?
I'm great. How about you?
Les, I'm doing great. I want to talk to you about next year, but I need you to go back for a minute to last year first, if you could. You're coming off a 4-12 season. You had a new coach in Sean McVay. You had a plan, but realistically, what were your expectations for the 2017 season?
Realistically, look, everything you did, you thought was going to help us improve, but I think from a realistic standpoint, all you can do, if you start where we were, like you mentioned at the beginning, and said, hey, let's become NFC champions or NFC West champions, that would be a daunting task. All you can do is come in every day and do your job, try to dominate your job, try to dominate what the main goal of that day is. And I think what happens is, whether it's the acquisition of Andrew Whitworth, Robert Woods, get the OTAs, you know, get better each day, get golf going, acquire Sammy. Well, all of those things end up snowballing into, you know, somewhere during the middle of the 17 season, I can be honest and go, okay, if we don't finish this off and win this division, I'll be disappointed. But it took just daily work to get there.
Les Snead joining us. Les, is that when you knew? Like, if I were to say to you, when did you know? Like, we've got a plan. We're executing this plan on a daily basis. It's coming together. But when did you know this is a really, really good football team? The middle of last season?
Well, it's you know, because obviously when Sean had to get here and his staff and Wade and they installed new schemes, you're going through OTAs, you can see progress, then all of a sudden there's turning. What's interesting, there was a scrimmage that we had against the Chargers where Jared had a really good two-minute session live against a really good defense that the Chargers have, and you're like, okay, we might have something here. But we go play an Indianapolis Colts team's opening game, and they're Andrew Luckless, and we beat them. But without Andrew Luck, you know, who are we still? Then we have a relatively big win in Dallas where you could see it tipping. But and I don't know the exact time, but probably after that Dallas, and then when we went, beat Jacksonville, went to London, beat Arizona, I think you're like, okay, let's go finish this thing off.
Rams GM, Les Snead, my guest. You know, Les, you look at Sean McVay, and the story goes that, and I've talked to a number of your players about Sean McVay, and the story being that the team was going to bring in head coaching candidates, and people did like McVay, but there was this concern about his age. Legend has it you declared McVay is a stud, and then that started the process of him becoming your head coach. So what did you see in him that made you feel like this guy was ready to lead a team regardless of his age?
When you first sat down with him in the interview, obviously it doesn't take long to figure out he was a bright guy. You can look back at what he did when you know, Jay gave him play calling duties for a couple of years. Obviously the success they had in Washington from an offensive standpoint, you could watch film, see how he, you know, got people open, used the run game, used running backs, developed a Kirk Cousin and things like that. So you knew all that. There was one question you'd have is, okay, is he too young? And really the only reason you're asking that question is because, you know, a 31-year-old head coach is somewhat unprecedented in the NFL. But it was probably less than 10 minutes in, I think I did write down on those, okay, age is not a problem here. Now you just got to decide if you want to hire really good head football coach or not.
So what is it about this guy? For instance, you know the guy's bright. I mean, really, really bright. You know he can scheme. You know he's got that pedigree. But how is he able to connect with players the way he is and literally everybody?
I don't know if I could articulate it well enough, but number one is football is very important. It's number one priority in our building. So if you come here as a player, you're going to realize really quick that football is a priority, and holy cow, this guy knows offensive and defensive football. So all he's going to talk to you about is football. But he relates to you because he is, you know, he is 31, he is 32. He knows all the things that generation know and do in terms of pop culture. So there's an element of, hey, wait a minute, this guy's kind of cool. But he has a standard, and when we go meet, and hey, we put the all the devices away because we're going to meet on football. We're going to get better at football. We're going to carry that over to the football field. He holds you to a standard. He'll coach everybody. And I think what he does is he's not coaching you hard or putting you down. He's actually teaching you, and in a very clear and concise way. And the players are like, wait a minute, this guy's got a standard, but what he's saying actually really helps me, and I think that's kind of a secret, but hard to articulate it.
We're talking to Rams GM Les Snead. You did a good job. I get that. I see it working. Let me ask you about Jared Goff. I mean, obviously, Les, you saw something in Jared Goff, or you would not have taken him number one overall, but that first season was not easy. What was the biggest difference for Goff in year one versus year two?
I think the biggest difference, I think, is, hey, he did get the experience of year one, and it's always good to – and we never thought he would, because that was the research coming out. Okay, when he does have adversity, he doesn't blink. But that experience helps, and that also fuels you into the off season of, okay, I want to get this right. But I do think all things considered, getting a fresh new start with a new head coach, new offensive coordinator, and now that, you know, building a foundation with what was going to be an, you know, his offense for multiple years really, really was the probably the secret to the success, and then him, you know, taking it on a day-by-day basis to get better. And I think Sean did a nice job of never asking Jared to do more than he was capable based on having a new offense. And then when he was capable, as it went along, he would, you know, add new tricks, add new pages to the playbook. And that's where we went.
Rams GM Les Snead joins me for another moment or so. I got to ask you about Ndamukong Suh. So when the opportunity came along to take a shot at Ndamukong Suh, what was your approach? I mean, like, what were the things that excited you about him? And then maybe what kind of concerns did you have?
I think the what we were excited was about is, okay, wait, and we call them bonus babies, right? And you weren't expecting that player to be on the market. But we did, what we did know is last year we did struggle to stop the run some in between the tackles, and this was going to be a human being that could easily come in and help us solidify that. But also be a player similar to Aaron Donald that on – you know, known passing downs when you are going to get after the passer, that, you know, those two paired together, you know, could create some mismatches for the other side of the ball. And I think the number one concern would be, okay, and Ndamukong's had a really good career, made a lot of money, is coming here, being a part of our team and helping us win, is that a priority? And I think that's where he's at in his career. I mean, he made it very clear, hey, I want to come help a team win, and I want to be a part of a winner.
Hey, Les, one last thought. This is a different town. You know that. So when you think about the fact that you've been involved in bringing the NFL back to Los Angeles, it could be a really heavy responsibility. I wonder how much of that factors into the way you approach your entire rebuild, and that you can't just rest on one good season, that it's not enough to win in this town. You have to win a certain way.
Yeah, I think big picture, you can't let that overwhelm you, but you do realize that, wow, you're a part of history when this is all said and done, and you're a steward of bringing this, you know, this franchise back. So it's a rare opportunity, unique responsibility, but I think what you have to do is just go back and do what you know you can do. Do your job, dominate your job on a daily basis, and break it down like that, and hire a lot of good people, whether it's players, coaches, you know, front office execs, scouts, all of that, and let's all go do our job and in the entire building, and we'll get this thing done.
Safe to assume, right? If everybody in the building dominates their job on a daily basis, good things are going to happen. Rams were 11-5 last year. They won their division, and they're at Oakland to start the year September 10th. Les, great job. Great conversation. Thank you very much. I appreciate you.
Appreciate you having me, Jim.
One of the longest-running stories in all football is Ben Roethlisberger's retirement plans, because it feels like for years now, we have been very close to hearing him officially hang it up. He keeps hinting at it, and you keep thinking, this is it, this is it. This time last year, according to his teammates, he was very, very close and didn't actually announce that he was going to come back until April. Then you might recall, in July, he said he would not commit to playing beyond 2017. Now, on the one hand, I do understand it. It's a brutal game. Few guys have taken more hits and more punishment than Ben Roethlisberger. I know he's a huge dude, but when your job is for other huge dudes to slam into you and then slam you to the frozen ground, that can get old. The injuries can mount up. And my man has had a ton of those. But the guy just keeps on coming, right? But he does keep on hinting that he might have had enough, that he might be retiring. So the Steelers have gone through this with him in recent years. They've heard him. They've heard the story every year for a while now that he's thinking about shutting it down. So they did the smart thing. They drafted his replacement, Mason Rudolph, in the third round of this year's draft. You might recall prior to the draft, we had Mason Rudolph in studio. He looks the part. He sounds the part. It's a good draft pick. I like it. The thinking being, now they've got a potential future starter waiting for when Ben does retire. And he keeps hinting that he's going to retire. So what's Ben's reaction to this? Retirement? Let's not get into that just yet. Actually, Ben was a little more explicit than, let's not get into that just yet. when asked about Rudolph as a future starter, Roethlisberger told the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, quote, "Well, that's fine. He can do that. But I plan on playing for 3 to 5 more years, depending on how the line goes, and staying healthy. If I can stay healthy, if he's going to be their guy, that's great. But in my perfect world, it's not going to be for a while." End quote. Wait, what? I thought that we were on a year-to-year, if not week-to-week basis with Ben. Week-to-week? How about half-to-half? Quarter-to-quarter? Series-to-series? Hell, play-to-play? And now they draft a backup, your potential replacement. And now you're interested in playing football for maybe 5 more years. All of a sudden, now this guy's really, really interested in playing football. And not just some football, but a lot of football. A ton of football. Hey, why stop there, Ben? Why not lock in until you're 50? Who knew that all the Steelers had to do to get some sort of commitment from Roethlisberger was to draft his replacement? It's fantastic. Oh, wait. Somebody else might get my job? Oh, hell no. I'm not going anywhere. I'm good. I'm here for good. Yeah, cool that you spent a third-round draft pick on that guy, but I'm not going anywhere. Haven't I made that clear? I'm going to play until I'm in my mid-40s. I may play 5 more years. I may play 10 more years. Yeah, go ahead and do that, but I'm good. It's kind of like when you've got some friends over, and you're all going to order a pizza. Everybody's going around making their order, throwing in a few bucks, but not you. Nah, you're not hungry. You're good. You're not feeling pizza right now. You're all good. They try to convince you to join in, even with breadsticks. Hey, we get breadsticks. You know that, right? Nah, I'm good. I'm good. I don't need to do that. So what do you do? What do you do? What do you do? The pizza comes and you're like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I want some pizza. And then you start slamming it in your face, piece after piece after piece. And all of a sudden you're hungry, but you didn't chip anybody off. And you're folding up slices and shoving them in your face faster than anybody else. Look, I'm not saying that the Steelers are going to be bent if Ben makes a commitment, if he's playing as well as he is. I mean, if you've got a Hall of Fame quarterback and he keeps putting up numbers, you want to keep that guy around. And it's not like you're going to give up on Rudolph just because Ben is suddenly interested in playing another half decade. But there's got to be a part of the Steelers that are thinking, hey, yo, bro, where was this passion and fire to play for the last few years? You know, this passion you have to play for a few more years. Exactly where was that? Had we seen that, we might not have burned a draft pick on a third-round pick. Last few years, you had 1 foot out the door, but now you're Tom Brady? Now you want to play 5 more years? Yeah, Ben, thanks. Thanks for nothing. This guy's been leading them around, kind of leading them on like, yeah, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. All right, fine. You don't know. We get it. We understand it. We get it. We need to draft a quarterback. Hey, whoa, I'm not going anywhere. I'll be here 5 more years. If I'm the Steelers, I got to be a little bit bent with that. Because all of a sudden, now the guy's great. And all they had to do to get a commitment from him was to burn a third rounder on his replacement. Steeler fans, reaction. We are joined by Cardinals wide receiver Christian Kirk. Christian, good morning. Good to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me.
Christian, good to have you. I never get tired of asking this question, and I've got to ask you about the phone call you receive Friday night. You're at your family's home in Scottsdale. You get the call from the Arizona Cardinals. What was that like, and what do you remember about receiving that phone call?
I mean, it was just a dream come true. So many, you know, talks about it possibly happening, but I never thought in a million years that it actually would. And, you know, just when that phone started ringing, you know, my heart just kind of just sank, and you know, just that feeling is so crazy, because I knew it was then. Once I saw the 602 area code, and you know, once I started talking, you know, to Steve Kime, I just you know, was overwhelmed with emotion, and you know, just thanking, you know, Steve and you know, Mr. Bidwell and Coach Wilkes, and just, you know, telling them, you know, thank you so much for the opportunity. And it's just so surreal that, you know, I'm going to be able to come home and play in front of all my family and friends, and to be able to have them there to share that moment was awesome.
You see, that's the thing. Christian Kirk joining us. That is the thing. You're from Scottsdale. You broke the Arizona high school record with 103 touchdowns, and now you're coming back to play for the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, kind of elaborate on that. Is there any way for you to put into words what it feels like to be coming home to live that dream?
It's tough. I mean, I don't think there's any words. Like you said, I'm born and raised here. I've played football all over the Valley, and there's so many people here that have seen me kind of grow, you know, into the player that I am today. And, I remember so early and often, people would always tell me that, one day that, I'd be able to play on Sundays. But, obviously there's so many things that could happen, when people are telling you that you're at when you're 10 and 11 years old. But, I just stuck to the course, kept following my dream and my vision that I had, and, was able to land me here. And, now that I'm back home, where it all started, like you said, it's just a dream come true.
Christian Kirk is my guest. So as a wide receiver, when you go to Arizona, you know what that means? That means you're going to be in the same position group and the same meeting room as Larry Fitzgerald. I know that's somebody that you look up to, somebody that you refer to as a mentor. What's it mean to be able to go to work to him every single day, to work alongside him?
It means the world. It actually motivates me to just be the best that I can every day. When you're around a guy like that, he brings everything to the table every day, and he's calculated. He has a plan, and everything that he does is calculated. So I'm just super excited to get in and work with him and just learn all the nuances of the position that he's learned over the years. And I know it's going to help make me successful early. And I'm just going to be a sponge and just soak in everything that he tells me and teaches me.
Christian, I can just keep going. I mean, also, there's the fact that you're going to wear number 13, which was the number made famous by Kurt Warner. Now, I know you've worked out with him in the past as well. What have you taken from those workouts, and then what's it mean to be wearing his number?
First off, I mean, it means the world. Just like you said, everything that he's done, in that number on the field, but not only, off the field as well, just, what he's done for the community. And, now he's coaching, over at Desert Mountain High School, and you just constantly see him giving back. And all the things that he's done for those kids around the Valley, and then, all the things that he's done for me, allowing me to come over to his home and, run routes in his backyard and be able to learn, from him, and just all the wisdom that he's been able to give me has just been, priceless. And, I thank him so much for all that. And like I said, just take it all in and run with it.
Well, and then he said this of you: I love Christian as a person and a player. I would love to have him join the Cards 13 Club. Listen, you've got that. Barry Sanders was on Twitter hyping you after that draft pick. You're going back home to play. I mean, this is really, really heady stuff, all of it. How do you make sure that you keep all of this from going to your head and not get caught up?
I have a tight circle around me. I have a circle that keeps me humble and is always making sure I'm at my best. I was never raised to, switch from the person that I am. I'm going to be the same person that I was since I started playing football when I was 5 years old. And I have my parents to thank for that. And, everybody else around me that I know is just going to be able to keep me balanced. And, whenever the highs are high, they're always there to even me out, keep me low. And whenever the lows are low, they're there to pick me up. So I give the majority of the credit to them for, making sure I am who I am.
Not only that, but there's an approach, right? There's an approach here, too. I think a lot of people know about your talent, but what keeps coming up is your professionalism. As an example, Kevin Sumlin said of you, quote, as a really young player, he put in the extra time and the extra work with his body to not only get stronger, but everything with nutrition, flexibility, you name it. What usually takes a lot of college players' time, he embraced his physical maintenance early in his career and approached it really like a pro does. I mean, to me, that's really unusual. Where did the attitude and approach come from, and how did you get on top of that so early?
Well, at an early age, I was blessed to be around a lot of NFL athletes, especially a lot of guys in the offseason come here to Arizona, and I just constantly got the opportunities to come out here and work with these guys and just to be able to see their mental approach and just, how they came to work every day and just the little things that they were doing to stay at the professional level. And that was my vision. That was my goal, was to be an NFL player. So, I wanted to start acting like it early. And, it worked out for me. And, I work to be the best at everything. And, I'm always looking for, an upper hand or a way to put me out in front. So early off. You know, I knew I couldn't do that if I wasn't on the field, if I was getting hurt. So I was making sure that I'm available to go and be 100% every week and making sure that I'm at my top performance. And that was number one, was nutrition and rehab. So that's become a big part of, you know, my whole ordeal, and you know, just still looking for ways to master it.
Christian Kirk, my guest. Before I let you go, in terms of nutrition, I'm always fascinated by how great athletes take care of themselves and how they fuel themselves. You're a fan of liver smoothies. Dude, yep. It sounds horrible. A liver smoothie. What is a liver smoothie, and how did you first get into them? I got to hear about this.
Yeah, so I got into them. The world-class boxer, Andre Ward, he was introduced to me by a director of player development at A&M, Mikado Henson, and he brought me in and was like, hey, you know, I want you to check out Andre. You know, the way he speaks and approaches his work, you know, reminds me a lot about you. And, you know, I think he'd be a good follow. So I started following Andre and just reading up, and I found an article about his nutrition regimen, you know, leading up to a fight. And one of the things was a liver smoothie. And like I said, I'm a big, you know, smoothie drinker. You know, always looking for a one-up in my nutrition, and I decided to go out and formulate my own version of the liver smoothie, and it has a lot of foods and vegetables and protein in it, but it just helps me recover.
Dude, that is savage. Like, exactly what is your version? What's in a liver smoothie recipe?
Strawberries, mangoes, some berries, a lot of spinach, protein, Greek yogurt, and then about 2 tablespoons of liver.
I mean, wow. I mean, do you, I want to ask you, why do you torture yourself? But I know why. You want the edge. Do you get to a point where it's something like you just got to eat bitter because that's part of the process, or do you actually enjoy them?
I actually enjoy it. And at the same time, like I said, it's, I know I'm getting better while drinking it. So it's, you know, I don't mind it.
It's great. A wide receiver for the Cardinals. He's coming back home. He had a great college career. He was the 47th pick in this year's draft, and the Cards open up against Washington September 9th. Christian, couldn't be any more impressed with you. Nice job. Thank you very much, and I would look forward to talking to you again during the season.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Matt in Vancouver. So, Matt, what do you make of this whole thing? What's up?
Hey, what up, Rome? Yeah, I've been around actually about 15 years. I only called recently. My man, Oren, holy crap. Can we get Jeff a liver smoothie and go ahead and send him the hell away again? Damn, man. And his palatial estate in Virginia. I think we know that was about 10 years in a supermax federal penitentiary for sex crimes, Jeff. And man, my man was disappointing. I was fired up for his call today, and then I see Pat Ewing bumbling around in Orlando Magic gear. Hey, Jeff, this ain't yesterday, slick. This Mac off coming in a couple months. You want to come in and get punked, jerseyed, get your ass tossed around by some lean, fitter, younger Canadians? Bring it on. War Oren in Denver. War dying empty. Peace, Rome.
War dying empty is strong. Nice job, Matt. Well done. Let's go to the phones. Now, this guy was a topic yesterday. We had a short bit on the best to never win a smack off. And I put Caleb in Green Bay on that list. Not because he's been doing it for so long, but because he hasn't been doing it for so long, but he's been doing it very well for a short period of time. 3 top teners. Let's go there right now. Caleb in Green Bay. Hey, Caleb, what's up?
Hey, not much, Tim. It was great to hear Jeff in Richmond earlier, the guy who used to be my dad's favorite caller. I can't wait to read about his comeback in next month's edition of Reader's Digest. But I do want to thank him both for introducing some much-needed decorum into the jungle and for finally launching his greatest hits album, Now That's What I Call Geriatric Volume 5. He didn't play my favorite song, Proliferation of Skanks, but I'm glad to see he's doing well. We'll see if he can keep up with the younger generation come the smack off. Jeff, throw some Polygrip on those chiclets, slug some prune face flavored Gatorade, and good luck getting that publisher's clearinghouse check. Those 5,000 bones on the table. But Jim, I call you today not as a clone, but as a senior smack-off analyst for CBS Sports Network. It's in my Twitter bio, so it must be true. I have some advice for the golden ticket holders, especially, I knew I was going to mess this up, a chief in Sacramento, home slice in Fort Collins, Slick in Buffalo, and of course my boy, there he is in Edmonton. I should probably learn their names at some point. Guys, you don't have to listen to me, but I was once where you are now. I did not hoard my golden ticket. I won mine in March of 2015. The smack-off was late June. My two personal favorite calls I've ever made to this program were in April and May. You have to keep getting reps. Don't wait for your opportunity like Jeff waits for the ambulance when he hits the life alert button. The reason Jim says just because you're in doesn't mean you're on is because the most calls Jim has taken in the last decade is 17 back in my rookie year. That sounds like a lot, but if you think about it, that number shrinks quickly. The legends are getting on. Recent champions are getting on. Guys like Jeff Passan, Benny in Wisco, Mark in Boston, myself are probably getting on. How many spots does that leave you? Three, maybe four if you're lucky. Work your ass off before the event. Make yourself irresistible so that Jim has to take your call. And when you get there on July 20th, do not expect anyone to welcome you with the homes wide open under the sunlight. Welcome to this place. Show you everything. The homes wide open. Out.
You nailed it. Rack him. Now his winger, Tyler in Edmonton. What's up, Tyler? How you doing?
Yo, homie. I mean, Romy. How's it going, buddy?
Good, dude. Good. How about you?
I'm good. First thing I got to say is that Liam Neeson wannabe, there's a new guy with pipes in the jungle. There's a new guy with the finest lettuce in town. Jeff, my Rockets make your crib partners look like Halloween ornaments. Romy, I don't know why Jeff is getting so much credit for calling anyway. His wife, Marie, called like 3 months ago. To my guy, Caleb, you must be knee-deep in an ice cream cake or haven't been listening very much. I'm one of the most active callers on the show. Lumping me in with a group full of smacky choppa contestants is a bit of a reach. You sound pretty confident in your accusations for a guy who ran a 2-minute 40 at Team Canada Combine. I fought off the choppa 3 times last year, and this year I'm taking over your country one state at a time, little man. Good night now!
Nice job, Tyler. Rack him. Matt in L.A., who I know is going to be fired up to respond. Matt, what's going on, brother?
Hey, Jim Rome. Thanks for the vine. Hey, for those watching on the CBS Sports Network, from L.A. to the Big Apple, from Hollywood to Hong Kong, you're welcome. For that insatiating eye candy gallery that your retinas are being treated to via the Matt in L.A. montage. Props to Silk Bra. I'm stepping my game up like a cherry lift, yo. As far as that sucked up hick sporting JCPenney leisure suits, stalking Bob Costas, and claiming that his fat third cousin is a Rocket wife, let's see the proof, Jeffro. Send in the pics. Because you got a catfish-like stink draping all over you like those imitation Armani suits you picked up at the Ranch Hand General Store, you puke. And memo to Jeff Rowe, we filled your spot already, son, with a better, more athletic, smack-talking newbie from Buffalo, my man Rick. And kind of like I'm the best Matt in the jungle, hey, Rick is a better version of you, you bass-ackwards ranch hand. That's all I got, Jim. War the Man Candy Manitoba Mimbos getting punked by a New York clone. War Jeff and Richmond's triumphant return on horseback. And unwar another smack off without the best to rock the smackrophone. Kerwin in Riverside. Outro.
Matt in L.A. All right, Matt, nice job. Benny in Wisco wants in. Benny, I've got time for you. What's up, Benny?
Not much. I just wanted to call and thank Caleb for laying out the guidelines to the newer Golden Ticket guys. And thanks for the Lumber Liquidators push. He forgot that part in his call, as well as Book's Flowers. And Caleb, don't forget to mention that in order to win on the big day, you have to eat up the competition, which is only a figure of speech. But looking at the latest selfie you posted on Twitter with your mutton chops and hipster glasses and satisfied jowls, it looks like you ate poor Luke in Fort Collins, which is a very bold strategy, buddy. Bravo. And how awkward was the end of that call? It was like you were expecting to get run, but it didn't happen. So you just kept singing. So to the new guys, if I could offer a word of advice, if you want the hammer dropped on you on purpose, you can't leave any doubt about it. And when your mom asks you how your phone call to the Jim Rome show went, you say, Mom, it was like a smuggled heroin balloon at an airport. Rectum.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Yeah, thanks, Ben.
Good night now!